Senate will come to order. Next order of business, messages from, let's see. Messages from the House.
February the 22nd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 366, Committee of the Whole indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 51, Safety Belt Violation. Ayes 28, noes 35, excused 3. February the 22nd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 367, Mr. President, Senate File 1, General Government Appropriations. The House has completed consideration of the budget bill, Senate File 1, pursuant to Joint Rule 14-1. Senate File 1 is referred directly to a conference committee of five members from each House to meet and report recommended amendments for total final consideration by both houses respect to the budget bills, Senate File 1, House Bill 1, and amendments thereto. February the 22nd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 368, conferees appointed Joint Conference Committee number 1, Mr. President. The Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 1. The House conferees are Representative Berger, Chairman, Representative Escobel, Harshman, Stewart, and Wallace. February the 22nd, 2011, from the House of Representatives. Message number 376, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill 13, Hathaway Success Curriculum 2. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 14, noes 43, excused 3. The House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Message number 377, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill 74, Validity of Marriages. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 7, noes 50, excused 3. The House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number 1, to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. February the 22nd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, messages concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 5, University Revenue Bond Supplemental Coverage. Ayes 56, excused 4. House Bill 37, Health Insurance Definitions. Ayes 52, noes 4, excused 4. House Bill 63, Subdivisions Water Study. Ayes 56, no, excused 4. House Bill 111, Public Works and Contractors 2, ayes 55, noes 1, excused 4. House Bill 143, Manufacturing Tax Exemption, ayes 56, excused 4. House Bill 153, Agriculture Gas Tax Refund Program, ayes 56, excused 4. House Bill 159, Uniform Trust Code Amendments, ayes 57, excused 3. House Bill 110, Successor Corporation Asbestos-Related Liability Act 2. Ayes 57, excused 3. February the 22nd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 379. Conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 71. The House conferees are Representative Yagi, Chairman, Representative Gingery, and Petroff. February the 22nd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 380. Conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 13. The House conferees are Representative Teeters, Chairman, Representatives Blake and McComey. February the 22nd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 381. Conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 74. The conferees are Representatives Edmonds, Chairman, Representatives Croker and Roscoe. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Joint Conference Appointments. In regard to message number 377, House Bill number 74, Validity of Marriage, the Senate Joint Conference Committee will be Hicks, Nutting, and Escobel. Hicks, Nutting, and Escobel, House Bill 74. Concurrence failed in regard to message number 376, House Bill 13, Hathaway Success Curriculum. The Senate Joint Conference Committee will be Coe, Barnard, and Rothfuss. Concurrences? Senator Nicholas, are you ready in regard to message number 355?
President, I am.
I'd ask the reading clerk to read that message in at this time.
February the 18th, 2011, from the House of Representatives. Message number 355, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 150, Notary. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 58, excuse 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Go ahead, Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I move message number 355 on Senate file number 150. Move for concurrence and ask you to vote aye. Ladies and gentlemen, what the House did, you recall that the portions of this notary bill was to adopt some of the Uniform Act, and they took a closer look at some of the areas and concluded that we could delete some of the language. Some of it, in fact, was talked about on this side, and it's language that doesn't hurt to delete and may even help the laws. It was intended for a national act, and we have some unique circumstances. On the bottom of page 2, there are deleting Romanets 3 and 4, believing that that's just not needed in Wyoming for the notary to exercise those independent judgments. On lines 10 through 11, they've deleted the language that says that you can confirm that the person signed it over the telephone. They're not deleting that altogether. They're simply moving that to a definition later on. And it's just a different way to skin the cat, and that's fine. Over on page 5, they deleted all the disqualifications. We had some concern over here. I think the deletion is fine. The issue in Wyoming, frankly, is that it is true that we know our notaries. We have relationships throughout the communities, and they felt like this was not a problem, and we ought to delete it, and I concur with them. On the top of page 6, they've lines 5 through 6, there is language that are deleted with respect to the whether or not you can persuade or have an influence on the person signing it and also be a notary. On the House side, they put in provision that you would be excluded from this if you're an attorney and talking with your own client. And I have no problem with that. The truth is we advise and consult our clients and urge them to do things on many occasions, and we often notarize their documents. No problem with that. The last changes are over on page 27, and that is the new definition that was added in, Mr. President, to address the issue of what it means to personally appear in the presence of or appear before. And that's where they deal with the issue of our Wyoming practice, and the paragraph B is a point important. The principal confirmed, the notarial officer, that the principal signed the document. You know, we've got rancher clients that may live in northern Albany County. They sign the document, send them in, and then we call them on the phone, and they'll say, yeah, I signed that. And that's practice that's pretty healthy. It's never created a problem. So I'd urge you to vote aye. I think their changes were appropriate and called for. Thank you.
Senator Meyer, go ahead.
Mr. President, just going through the disqualifications on page 5. So we're striking that. We're basically saying that a notary can be qualified to perform a notarial act if he is a party to or named in the document that is to be notarized, or will receive as a direct result a fee, a commission, advantage, right, title, interest, cash, or property, or other consideration exceeding in value of the fees specified. I wonder if those are the disqualifications that were taken out and whether they appear anyplace else or have been moved in a different part of the bill.
Any others before Senator Nicholas responds his second time? Seeing none, go ahead, Senator Nicholas.
Mr. President, that's new language. It is being proposed to take it out. They felt like it wasn't necessary. We have other statutes that provide, for example, with wills and transfers of land that you cannot sign a will, for example, as a witness or a notary if you're going to be a beneficiary, but that's in other parts of the statutes. The language doesn't exist today. They felt that it was we didn't need to adopt the Uniform Act. I can think of some instances where, you know, the classic one I would think is if a vehicle is being transferred and you're selling it, your mother wants to send it to you, you're the only notary, you do it, you transfer it to you and you use it a trade-in. I don't know, there are a lot of those instances you sure shouldn't do. But I don't know if we need a statute to tell people that you can't do these things because, frankly, I don't think the notaries do it. There are sufficient notaries out there, but I'm not sure that we have to tell them they can't do it. And that's the best answer I can give to you.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, the motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 150. You've been asked to vote aye. I'd ask the Chief Clerk to please call the roll.
Barnard,
aye.
Bebelt,
aye.
Burns,
aye.
Case,
no.
Christensen,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Cooper,
aye.
Dockstetter,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Emmerich,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert, Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Meyer,
no.
Nicholas, Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 28 ayes, 2 noes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 150. Signing of enrolled acts. House Enrolled Act number 31.
House Enrolled Act number 31 being original House Bill 18.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 31, original House Bill 18. Have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 32.
House Enrolled Act number 32 being original House Bill 109.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 32, original House Bill 109. House Enrolled Act number 33.
House Enrolled Act number 33 being original House Bill 113.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 33, original House Bill 113. Have so signed. House Enrolled Act 34.
House Enrolled Act number 34 being original House Bill 7.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 34, original House Bill 7. Have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 15.
House Enrolled Act number 35 being original House Bill 80.
House Enrolled Act 35, original House Bill 80, I'm about to sign. And so signed. House Enrolled Act number 36.
House Enrolled Act number 36 being original House Bill 99.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 36, original House Bill 99. Have so signed. Joint Conference Committee report. Senator Coe, are you ready in regard to message number 30?
Yes,
Senator Coe, I'll repeat that. Are you ready in regard to message number 357?
Yes, Mr. President.
Go ahead and reading clerk, read that in at this time.
Joint Mr. Conference President. Committee report, Senate file 101, Hathaway Student Scholarship Program, reference House message number 357 to engross copy. Signing for the House, Representatives Teeter, Bonner, and Green, signing for the Senate, Senators Coe, Jennings, and Rothfuss.
Go ahead, Senator Coe.
Mr. President, I would move Joint Conference Committee report, reference message 357, being original Senate file 101, Hathaway Student Scholarship Program. We had a discussion on the concurrence request on the language that was deleted on page 2 by the House, and this was a very, very lengthy conference committee, but we managed to convince them of the error of their ways. The main discussion had to do on page 2, line 11, through page 2, line 16, ending on which leads to a professional degree. We reinserted all that language that we had heartburn over to read, and that student has earned a certificate or degree from a Wyoming community college or has otherwise successfully completed sufficient courses for eligibility to enroll in courses within a program offered by a Wyoming community college, which leads to a professional degree. This was the heartburn that we had on the floor of the Senate. They saw the error in their ways. We got them to roll over on that immediately, and I ask that you support the conference committee report.
The motion is that the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee number 1 report in regard to message number 357 in reference to Senate file 101. You have been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Barnard,
aye.
Bebout,
aye.
Burns,
aye.
Case,
aye.
Christensen,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Cooper,
aye.
Dockstader,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Amrick,
aye.
Esquibel,
aye.
Geist,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 30 ayes.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 in regard to Message Number 357, referencing Senate File 101. Reports from standing committees.
February the 23rd, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1 Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 189 engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman. February the 23rd, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1 Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 167, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman. February the 23rd, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 141, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins. No, Senator Christensen, Senator Perkins, Chairman. February the 23rd, 2011, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1 Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 92, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman.
Bill's on second reading. Senator Dockstetter, go ahead, please.
Mr. President, if I could take a minute in this transition to introduce the body of the Senate to a wonderful, above-average, well-dressed group of Star Valley Middle School students who made the 450-mile bus trip over to Cheyenne to take a look at state government. Could you please stand up there?
I won't try to repeat all the description, but I will say to those of you above, welcome. Anybody with those qualifications is welcome anytime. Now we'll go on to bills on second reading. House Bill 36, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 36, Cancer Control Act Amendment, sponsored by Representative Escobel.
No amendments. Any discussion? Senator Landon, go ahead.
Mr. President, thank you. We had a good discussion on this bill yesterday. I just wanted to follow up with a couple of pieces of information that I think hopefully will help fellow senators on the third reading. It's estimated, we talked about those follow-up screenings. It's estimated that, Mr. President, about 16 to 24 individuals in a given year would qualify for that follow-up exam. That's out of a total of about 480 to 500 of these procedures that are done during a given year. So we're talking about a little bit less than 5% of individuals who would qualify. If all of them were done, it would come up to about a 5% figure. And as you can remember in the bill, it does say that those will be looked at on a case-by-case basis. Those rescreenings would have to comply with national and state guidelines, but hope that helps. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Hastert, do you have something else for us?
Mr. President, I also did a little bit of discussion about this, and, you know, I had an opportunity to talk with the director last night, and he indicated that, you know, when there were, you know, some of the questions that were raised about the budget concerns, he said what happened is that they have been able to get some fantastic deals and thus saving quite a bit of money for that. And so he said that, you know, that within the, and he said that also indicated that all of this was tobacco settlement money. And it was just been the fact that they were able to absorb all of this because of the deals. And the, statewide, all of the providers have been working with them and at a reduced cost.
Thank you. Other discussion in regard to this? Seeing none, House Bill 36, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 49, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 49, Primary Care Support Program, sponsored by the Labor Committee.
Is there any discussion? There are no amendments. Seeing no discussion, House Bill 49, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 73, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 73, Dental Services Freedom Bill, sponsored by Representative Pedersen.
No amendments. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, House Bill 73, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 129, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 129, Nuclear Energy Production Study, sponsored by Representative Harshman.
Senator Crowe, do you have some discussion for us?
President, yesterday on Committee of the Whole, my good friend and colleague from KC over here raised a question about what the Energy Council was addressing when it comes to nuclear power. And currently the Energy Council is exploring three different aspects of nuclear power this year. The first, which was discussed at the global meeting in Santa Fe, December 2010, was extending the lives of nuclear power plants. That presentation was by Mr. Kenneth Hughey, the Vice President of Nuclear Business Development, Entergy. In summary, nuclear power supplies 20% of the total electrical generation needs of the U.S. The 104 operating nuclear power plants do this safely, securely, economically, with zero GHG, greenhouse gas emissions. Furthermore, unlike other zero greenhouse gas emission sources, nuclear power plants provide the energy 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, all to benefit the U.S. economy. Extending the operating life of our current nuclear fleet is vital for the health of the U.S. economy and the world's climate. The second aspect, which will be covered in our federal meeting next week, which we can attend in Washington, is going to focus on the status of new nuclear plants and impacts on consumers. They have a special speaker lined up from the Nuclear Energy Institute addressing this matter. And finally, at the 2011 annual meeting in Anchorage, September 29th through October 2nd, we'll be discussing the prospect for small modular nuclear reactors, which may be of significant and real interest to the state of Wyoming. So I bring that in response to a question from my good friend from KC.
Any other discussion in regard to this House bill? Seeing none, House Bill 129. Go ahead, Senator Case.
I just want to comment that we have a very busy travel schedule around the nuclear industry.
House Bill 129, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 135, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 135, State Land Improvements 2, sponsored by Representative Gear.
No amendments. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, House Bill 135, having been read two separate times, question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 136, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 136, Appointments to County Commissioner Vacancy, sponsored by Representative Barbuto.
No amendments. Any discussion? Seeing none. House Bill 136, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. House Bill 139, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 139, Wyoming Veterans Memorial Highway, sponsored by Representative Bonner.
No amendments. Any discussion? Seeing none, House Bill 139, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 151, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 151, Hydropower Development, sponsored by Representative Semlich.
No amendments. Any discussion? Seeing none, House Bill 151, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 193, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 193, Nursing Care Facility Assessment, sponsored by Representative Childers.
There are no amendments. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, House Bill 193, having been read two separate times, question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 203, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 203, Child Support Orders, sponsored by Representative Lubnow.
Is there any discussion? There are no amendments. Seeing none, House Bill 203, having been read two separate times, is question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 235, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 235, Natural Gas Vehicle, sponsored by Representative Roscoe.
Any discussion? Seeing none, House Bill 235, having been read two separate times, question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 242, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 242, Insurance Surplus Line, sponsored by Representative Illoway.
Is there any discussion? Seeing none. House Bill 242, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 248, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 248, Unlawful Protesting at a Funeral Amendments, sponsored by Representative Byrd.
House Bill 248, is there any discussion? Seeing none, House Bill 248, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. House Bill 249, second reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 249, Acceptance of Citation, sponsored by Representative Nicholas.
There is an amendment, and I'd ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time.
House Bill 249, second reading, amendment number 1, page 4, line 7.
Senator Meyer, would you like to speak to the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would move second reading amendment 1 to House Bill 249 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, when we were looking at this bill in committee of the whole, I noticed that if you accepted a citation, that actually said that you were going to appear in a court. But then again, in this other section, if you accepted the citation, you refuse to give your promise to appear in court. So we just wanted to make sure that it was clear. Mr. President?
Go ahead.
Yeah. So we just wanted to make sure that it was clear what happened, that if you were not going to give your promise to appear in court, that it was manifested by your refusal to accept the citation. So that's what the language does. It deletes by accepting and inserts manifested by his refusal to accept the citation. And so it makes it clear that if you're not going to appear in court, you just don't accept the citation. But if you promise to appear in court, you accept the citation.
Questions? Discussion? Seeing none, the question before us is in regard to second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 249. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye. All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Any further discussion? Seeing none. House Bill 249 having been read two separate times, question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Bill's on third reading. House Bill 127, second reading of the bill, or third reading of the bill.
House Bill 127, School Finance Recalibration, an act relating to school finance, sponsored by the School Finance Committee, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment, and I'd ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time.
House Bill 127, third reading, amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 12, line 6.
Senator Von Flatiron, would you like to speak to the amendment, or would you rather, Ms. Senator Nicholas? Senator Nicholas, go ahead and speak to the amendment, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 127. Folks, there's a new set of spreadsheets that came out this morning, and I'll take you through that. Remember, the objective of this amendment and the one that we passed on second reading is to lower the amount of money that the state has to borrow in order to meet its obligations to the entitlement districts and the recapture districts. We put an amendment on earlier, and then we were asked by a district to take a look at their cash flows because, and it is true, we want to make sure that every district can cash flow their obligations and at the same time lower the state's obligations to borrow from the Common School Permanent Land Fund. So the way this new language works, if you turn over to the top page of the handout, the entitlement districts are shown on the first boxes, and it shows that, again, how they're going to receive their money. They'll get 15% of their entitlement in August and 10% thereafter until the last 2 months when they get 5%, and they'll finish out their entitled amounts. With respect to recapture districts, what we learned is there's really two categories of recapture districts. There are those that whose recapture money is less than 300% of their guarantee, and those that are more, or I should say that one that is more, and we'll show you what that is. And so we've treated them differently. We still have the issue that for the recapture districts, they're not receiving their recapture money that is at issue until principally January, December and January, and they still have expenses to pay at the beginning of the year. So we're authorizing an interest-free loan from the school foundation program account in September of 20% or one-fifth of their guarantee amount, and that we're asking that be repaid on December 15th. Now, if they don't pay it back on December 15th, then the loan amount begins to bear interest at 6%. But by our assessment and the cash flows, they'll all be able to pay it back on December 15th. But we've left an option if they want to pay 6%. And so you see on the recapture districts on down about midway through the page, you'll see the maximum loan guarantee underneath the September box. Over on December 15th, you'll see the loan repayment. And then what we're asking is instead of in the first amendment that we passed, we required all districts to repay 50% of their recapture money in January, and now we're making a distinction. If your guarantee amount is more than 300% then of your expenses, then you repay 50% as we had it before. But if it's under 300%, we lower that to 40% to make sure that those districts can continue to cash flow their needs with the recapture. And then the final recapture payment is either 60 or 50, depending on your category, in June. If you turn to the next page has our cash flow demands under the proposed amendment, actual, and the difference. Where you see the difference is now the maximum that we anticipate having to borrow from the Common School Permanent Land Fund is in October, and the borrowings are $50 million. That compares to a $212 million first borrowing and a second borrowing of $166 million later, that would be about a total of about $300 million total borrowing. This will mean that in the Common School Permanent Land Fund, the Treasurer will now have to keep in liquid or semi-liquid funds about $50 million, but it reduces it almost by $250 million. And that, as we pointed out, is money that can now be invested long-term, resulting in larger yields to the school foundation program account. And that's the principal objective. If you look at the next one is the tables, you can see how this bill is implemented. In the table, the lowest graph are the school district expenses, and that's the dotted with a hash on the bottom. So we want to make sure everybody is above that line or nearly above it to pay all their expenses without having to go into their reserves and without having to or making sure that it's all positive. So the entitlement districts are the red line with the title or with the
Senator Nicholas, we're bumping up against the time.
Okay, well, I'm going to sit down, and then that shows you the districts. The below and above 300% is on the last page. And, Mr. President, I'll sit down, take questions, and then come back and explain anything that you don't get.
Okay. Go ahead, Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I play tag team with a good senator from Albany County. When you do look at this graph, what you're taking, what we're doing now, the red line with the diamonds, red diamonds in it, is your entitlement districts. That's 39 districts. That hasn't changed. That red line is the money they're receiving. The blue, the dark black line at the bottom with the asterisks on it, that's the bills on average that each district is paying as the year goes on. The recaptured districts, that's what we're changing. That is the solid blue line with clear circles on it. You'll notice that in September, they'll get 20% of their foundation grant, and that puts them up about 25% of their total. That's above September. It goes along paying their bills for about a month. In comes in October, November, December, you start getting your tax money in. That brings that blue line up to that peak. It's got kind of an X in the middle of it. That's about mid-December. December 10th, of course, everything being just perfect in this world, December 10th, they'll receive a check from their county treasurer. By the 15th of that month, they need to send back that original loan they received back in September. Then they have about 30 more days to January 15th to send back either 40% of their total recapture money that's expected this year or 50% of your total recapture money, depending on whether you collect over three times what it costs you to run your schools or less than three times what it costs you to run your schools. So that'll bring that dark blue line down to about right above the middle of January, about its lowest point. It goes straight across. They're getting some income in from taxes as the year goes on. You'll see that bottom line where you're paying your bills, the dark black line, gets closer and closer. So about April, they're not very far apart. Then your taxes come back in. The blue line goes up for May, June. By June 15th, everybody evens up with the foundation, sends in their recapture money, sends in any money above their 15% reserve that they get to keep, and everybody's good and happy, and hopefully this whole thing starts over again the following year. What the big difference is that this loan at the beginning, that shaded area between what they owe and what they've been given at the beginning, is they are not charged interest on, and that area between what they have to pay for the rest of the year, the second half of the year, and what they may have in their local banks, that interest they garner from that is not counted against them. But you notice the entitlement districts and the recapture districts have about the same percentage of money. So there's, if you pay your loan back by December 15th, you don't pay any interest. If you garner any interest from any savings in local banks, it's not counted against you as a local resource. I stand in favor of this amendment.
Other discussion? Senator Koh, go ahead.
President, you know, this is an issue that has been troubling. You know, clearly everything we're trying to talk about is parity, how the money flows, how we maintain the integrity of the Commonwealth School Permanent Land Fund, how we do all this stuff. I support this amendment because I think it evens the playing field out for everybody, recapture districts as well as entitlement districts. And I think it's been explained very well, and I'd urge that you support the amendment.
Other discussion? Question being called. Question is in regard to third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 127. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are now back on the bill. There are no further amendments. Any further discussion in regard to the bill? House Bill 127, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? I'd ask the Chief Clerk to call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Ebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert. Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
No.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 28 ayes, 2 noes.
House Bill 127. Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 127 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that brings us to the consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried, and I would ask for Senator Nutting to come take the chair.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. Senator Case.
Madam Chairman, thank you. Group the floor, please.
You may.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, it's a great pleasure to make some introductions here. First off, this man is not standing, but if he were standing, you would see that this is former Senator Mark Harris, who used to sit in this very seat. And he's brought a group of students from my district and from some of the Native American students and others from the Wind River Indian Reservation. We've actually got students from the Central Wyoming College Gear Up program. They're visiting from St. Stephen's Indian High School, from Wyoming Indian High School, and Fort Washakie High School. So would you please stand? I can see they're joined by some, I see Mr. Troutman's up there and some other folks, and welcome to the Senate. Senator, join me. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Case, and welcome, students. Senator Nicholas.
Gary Troutman up there is my brother-in-law. It's, the brother-in-laws don't have hair, but they're still good buddies. They ski well.
The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 100. The reading clerk will read the House bill.
House Bill 100, Game and Fish, Land Acquisition, an Act Relating to Game and Fish, sponsored by Representative Shepperson. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Byrne, Dockstader, and Driscoll. No, Senator Esquibel, excused. Senator Christensen, Senator Burns, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 100. There are no committee amendments. And to give a further explanation of the bill, I ask that you call on the good senator from Powder River.
Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, House Bill 100 deals with the Game and Fish land acquisition. It goes into their powers and duties. And what it does is the Game and Fish does not have the power of eminent domain, and it adds that they cannot get land through adverse possession or prescriptive easements. Madam Chairman, this bill comes about because of a lawsuit, and it was, and I've got it here. It's great reading. It was Davidson and some other people against the Game and Fish. It had to do with an easement on the North Platte River, basically a fishing. I've been there. It is good fishing, by the way. But it was a lawsuit over the terms of the easement. And it went through court and actually went to the Supreme Court. And what happened, the lawsuit itself, it's all done and history now. But it had and is having a chilling effect on the willingness of landowners to have deals with the Game and Fish, excuse me, such as walk-in areas to fish or hunt. Landowners get nervous when lawsuits like that happen, and that program, the walk-in program, the walk-in hunting program, and Madam Chairman, just so you know, I've got two of those walk-in areas for fishing on Powder River. They're a good deal. They're a good deal for the landowner. They're a good deal for sportsmen. But we as landowners get nervous when we see lawsuits like this. And what this bill does is says, landowners, you can now get comfortable again with your walk-in areas because your land is not going to be condemned by adverse possession. Over the last, I'm going to take a guess, about 10 years, we've seen a real growth in using walk-in areas, both for hunting and fishing. As I say, they're a good deal for both sides. But the effect of that lawsuit is that if you're a landowner, and you can renew those walk-in areas for either 1 year or 5 years, what you do is you pull them out for a year. And you do that every 4 years just to make sure that you're not going to have adverse possession. What this bill does, it says, landowner, you don't have to worry about it. The Game and Fish cannot take your land, continue to have your walk-in area, whether it's for hunting or fishing. It puts our mind, actually nothing puts our mind at ease, particularly when we hear things go bump in the dark, but this helps put our mind at ease. I think it puts on a very stable footing what is a very good partnership. The leadership of Game and Fish changes over the years, and so I think we got to make sure everybody understands what the rules of the ball game are. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but this is a good bill. I think it promotes a good relationship between landowners and our Game and Fish Department.
We got to keep moving.
Senator Ross.
Just a couple questions. I'd like to know, in testimony, what, you know, is the Game and Fish okay with this? I mean, I know this is in response to a lawsuit that occurred up in, I think it was Natrona County. And the issue was over where the line is within in the river, particularly when there's low flow, vis-a-vis higher flow, and, quite frankly, I thought the opinion was accurate or was okay in resolving that dispute. And, of course, this law won't have any effect on that. But I'm just wondering if you had similar situations, what would happen in that event?
Senator Nicholas.
Madam Chairman, along the same lines, and I guess I share the concerns with the with the proponents of the bill, that if you offer up or you grant an easement that's or a walk-in area that's on a temporary basis, public use over that is not adverse. So by definition, it's not adverse possession, and you shouldn't have to worry about that. I share that. I also share concern, though, that any time we see these bills fronted to try to correct litigation results, you also have unintended consequences. And one of the areas that I worry about is, suppose the Game and Fish went out and purchased an easement, say, 20 years ago or 10 years ago. And for 10 years or 20 years, the public's been using that frequently as consistent with the easement. And then a new buyer comes in, buys the new land, and says, you know, I don't want to have people walking across there. I know my predecessors sold that easement, but I want to lock off access. They go out and hire good lawyers. Lawyers go out and find a defect in the instrument. Now, in that instance, if there's a defect, if you had bought it, the continuous use would help define and perfect any defect in that original instrument. And in that instance where we purchase it and we acquire it by deed, it seems to me that we ought to have all the rights that a private person would have to perfect our interests. And maybe we can, if that's not the intended scope of the bill, maybe we can draft an amendment later on to make sure we distinguish between adverse possession that arises out of a purchased easement, and the question is what's the scope of it, as opposed to these ones that, and I agree with you, that if you just want to let the public use your space, you ought to be able to close it down because one's permissive, and then when you decide to withdraw your permission, it's over.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As the good senator from Albany County said that you should correct that defect. But the question I really have is that should it correct it to the benefit of the person who issued the easement, or the benefit of the original intent of the easement? And let's say you have a state section that's on a piece of stream that's a half mile, a mile off the road, and there's an open fishing area there. And you've given, as a landowner, an easement, paid good money for it, for a pathway to walk to that fishing area. Well, all right, fine. You sell the land, as was described. But at some point in time, some of the good public said, well, you know, you really ought to have handicap access to that, but so you have to have four-wheelers drive across that. And that wasn't the intent of the original seller, that it was a pathway. But now the Game and Fish says, well, we want to increase that. So they say we're going to have four-wheeler access to that fishing section. From my perspective, that the defect, as might be purported, it is no defect. That you sold an easement, it was bargained for, it was for a pathway. And if by a prescriptive easement that the Game and Fish allows four-wheeler traffic across there, that is totally in disregard to the original bargain. And what I think this bill would do is say that you go back to the original bargain, and what you think you can get by with is something that you can't get by with.
Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Let me deal with the questions for the majority floor leader. The testimony from the Game and Fish was that this bill does not affect their land acquisitions at all. As a matter of fact, in part of, and this is the, I don't know if he's the former director or in the transition process, but it was the director we had before the director we're going to confirm next week or wherever we're at. In certain respects, they are supporting this. They want a partnership with landowners. They want that partnership to be on firm footing. I think that's just good policy. I think the Game and Fish realizes that, and certainly the director before the one that we're going to confirm follows that strategy also. So I'm very comfortable with that we can keep that relationship going. In terms of curing a defect in a purchased easement, as I understand it, this would have no effect on the process to cure a defect. that is a legal proceedings. If there is, we missed it in doing our research on this. And let me point out, this is not in any way impacting the court decision that happened in Natrona County. That's a done deal. Nor are we trying to. What we're trying to do is maintain the good relationship that we've had with the Game and Fish, particularly over the last two Game and Fish directors. That's been a sea change in terms of the ranching interests, the livestock interests, and Game and Fish. I think it's a very positive relationship, and I think we have to be careful to maintain that in its trust. If you want to get right down to it, do we trust what the people that wear red shirts tell us, and do they trust what we visit back with them? I think it's a real asset to our state, and this is intended to be a protection, if you will. I do not, as I understand it, believe it impacts at all if you have a defect in a document, say a purchase or whatever. I do not believe this impacts it. If it does, I missed that completely. I hope that answers the concerns.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, I'm all for having trust between the landowners and the Game and Fish. Certainly in our area, we've got two-thirds of our ranch in the Muddy Mountain Hunter Management Area. It's an excellent deal. Combined with our neighbors, it gives the public a great big block of land where they can go hunt. It's a very sensible way to manage a mixed public and private landscape. Works to benefit the landowners and hunters. But I have a little different concern, and I think it may apply to some of the fishing easements that the Game and Fish has acquired either by gift or by purchase over the years, where often for a payment, a landowner has given up the right to, and given an easement to Game and Fish to have access to a certain body of water for fishing. And there are a number of these around the state. And what happens is that the original landowner, in due course of time, sells out to somebody else, and you get some wealthy individual in there who just soon shut everything down. And they find something that isn't quite right or some other excuse, and they go to court and try to or just lock it up and force the Game and Fish to go to court to enforce their rights. And normally you get a circumstance like that, so you get a county road that's not in the right place. And gee whiz, those are all over the place. I know of one in Natrona County where if you look at the actual easement for the road, it goes right across my neighbor's irrigated field. Well, the actual road runs around the perimeter. And that's where, I think if you get into court, that's where the road is going to go, is right where it has, around the perimeter, rather than where the document describes it as going, which was done, I don't know why, way back when. And you need to have this prescriptive easement kind of language to be able to get that settled the way it should be, which is the way it has always been understood. And I'm a little concerned about this bill to make sure we aren't messing up that kind of circumstance, because I think that a fair amount of the land where the fishing easements are is very likely eventually to fall into the hands of somebody who would rather the fishing easement wasn't there and wants to get rid of it. And that's something the Game and Fish has paid good money for. And my constituents that enjoy hunting and fishing have taken advantage of these easements and don't want to lose them.
Senator Schiffer.
Madam Chairman, and I'll try and enlighten my colleague from Natrona County. This bill does not apply to county roads. This bill applies to the Game and Fish Department. So his road is safe, and he can continue to put up hay or whatever he's doing on where the county road should be. It does not apply to county roads. It applies to game and fish. In terms of the game and fish purchased easements, those are that's a contract. It's just like any other purchase. If there's a defect, if the case comes true and someone wants to contest an easement, that's a legal proceedings. They're entitled. We're all entitled to go to court. This does not impact that access to court or to the proper documentation of an easement. But what it's saying is, Game and Fish, you do not have the authority. The authority, and in Game and Fish, that's all it applies to use adverse possession and prescriptive easements. It clarifies what their authority is. That's all. It does not impact court proceedings or the access to court proceedings or even the outcome. And again, I stress it has absolutely no impact on the lawsuit that made people nervous in the ag community.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 100, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 100 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 152. The reading clerk will read the House bill.
House Bill 152, Very Rare or Uncommon Area Designations, an act relating to the Environmental Quality Act, sponsored by Representative Semlick. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State Public Lands, and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senator Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks, Senator Geis, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Geis?
The whole rise and report. I move that House Bill 152 do pass, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Bebout to explain the bill.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Member of the Senate, House Bill 152, this is a bill that this body saw a year ago in a different form, but the issues are the same. And just a little bit of background about this. The language, very rare or uncommon, has been in our statute since the late 1970s. And there's been some things in that that have caused a lot of concern to a lot of people in our state about what this really does, in fact, to private property, right to develop your minerals. And if you look at the statutes and understand what this thing does, if you have the Environmental Quality Council, which is comprised of 7 appointed members, that can make decisions based on our statutes to declare something very rare or uncommon. And what they do when they do that, it could be as little as, I think some of them are 500 acres, and as large as one called Adobe Town, it's 180,000 acres. They go out there and through a process, and it's a petition process where somebody that wants to designate it that, petition the EQC, they look at the petition, and they make a final decision on that, whether or not to declare it very rare or uncommon. And if that happens, that can include private property, it can include BLM land, it can include state lands. And a good example would be the Adobe Town particular very rare or uncommon designation, where 180,000 acres were declared that, and the EQC voted on that and made that declaration. Of that 180,000 acres, 160,000 acres was BLM land, 20,000 was private land, of which 10,000 had minerals. 10,000 was state land, and 10,000 of it was private land where the surface owner and minerals were owned by a private individual. And Madam Chairman, what happens under our statutes, a taking is defined as that of a mineral interest owner. So in that particular case, where the mineral owner lost his right to develop that, he could have, in fact, gone under our statutes and applied for a taking and had some compensation given. But the surface owner, there's nothing in our statutes that would take care of that. The other thing that happens, Madam Chairman, is in a particular area like that, if you in fact had a BLM oil and gas leases or were considering doing that, and the reality of it is if the BLM looks at your lease application and sees that this area is already designated by the state as very rare or uncommon, probably not going to issue your leases. Or if in fact they do, I'm not sure how you would ever get in to develop those leases. And so, Madam Chairman, that's the purpose of this bill is to, I think, look at an area where there's a lot of concern, valid concern, about how we treat private property and this designation. By the way, this designation is done by an appointed board. The thing that really brought this to light, Madam Chairman, besides the Adobe Town issue, was an issue up in northeastern part of our state called Crow Creek, where there were several petitions. In fact, I think actually four or five of them had to be filed before they got it correct, to take 17,000 acres, and that might have been the last number of acreage, but a lot more than that, to declare very rare or uncommon. A lot of that was private land. There's a lot of consternation and concern up there over this particular issue. I will tell you that 2 or 3 years later, I'm not sure how much money was spent and the time involved, the EQC finally did decide that they would not declare that very rare and uncommon. So, Madam Chairman, what we do is bring to you this bill to, if you look at the bill on page 3, in fact, it starts on page 1, and that gives the powers and duties of EQC and delineates what they fact can or cannot do. Then on page 2, lines 19, is a language which are very rare or uncommon. And rather than getting to changing that language, what the sponsors in the House did, Madam Chairman, is on page 3, starting with line 2, they said, no new designations shall be made pursuant to this paragraph after July 1, 2011. It goes on to say, but the council shall retain the authority to remove designations made prior to that date. I've spoken with the sponsor of this bill, and particularly about that second provision as to why we would want to put that in there. And his feeling was, and it made sense to us, and I think some of the testimony we heard in the Ag Committee on this showed that in fact, things may change. You may have an area that's been designated very rare or uncommon for a considerable period of time. Something happens. Maybe there's a mineral there that you really want to have developed. Maybe there's something else that we really don't know about today. To give that EQC, that seven-member board, the authority to do that, if they had the authority to set it up in the first place, possibly they would have the authority to, in fact, declare that not very rare and uncommon. Madam Chairman, the other thing that I would tell you is that in our state, I think, and I'm not exactly sure on this number of acreage, but 8 to 10 million acres are already wilderness in our state. I think 15% of our state is national parks. There's a whole lot of our state that has been declared off limits to any kind of exploration at all. And one of the things comes to mind is if you look at our national forest and the bighorn forest that we talked about with the relative to timber harvesting, and I think there's maybe 1.5 million acres up there, but the only acreage that's available to somebody that want to go up there and harvest timber is about 20% of that. So we really have a situation in Wyoming where not only the feds, but also with this kind of designation, real good productive land is just removed forever. I think it's a good bill, and I would be glad to answer any questions.
Senator Ross.
Madam Chairman, and a question on the procedure of this, because I think I'm in favor of the bill, but I'm wondering about the removal of current designations and how that would occur, and how does it get back before the Environmental Quality Council, and whether or not that is wise once that has been done to provide now at a later date after there has been a designation of now saying that may not be valid any longer. So just a couple of questions about that, how that would occur, and whether or not it's wise to go in and give more power to remove a designation.
Senator Bebout.
Madam Chairman, that would work in the same way that we do now for a petition to put it to declare it very rare or uncommon. So, in fact, someone wanted to reverse that decision. The petition process is set up in the Environmental Quality Act. There's a procedure they go through, and they have to have it correctly done. And the EQC will either deny or grant that petition. Then once they've had it in the form they agree with, then they'll have the hearings and make a determination.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I had been told that the council did not have the power to declare or not declare. I'm hearing from you that they can say yes, that is a very rare or uncommon area, or they can say no and shut her down and it's done. Am I right?
Senator Bebout.
Madam Chairman, you are correct. The EQC has the ultimate authority, the way the language are drafted now, to make that determination. It requires a petition for someone that wants to have that designation put in place. And then once they get the petition in the process or in the kind of format that they agree to, then they vote yay or nay. Yes, it is very rare and common, or no, it is not.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I already know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. If they say no and the NGO that has the petition doesn't like their no, they can take it to court, right?
Senator Bebout.
Madam Chairman, my understanding is just like any decision the EQC makes through the Wyoming Procedures Act, they have an opportunity to go to court.
Will the reading clerk read the First Amendment?
House Bill 152, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 4.
Senator Case, do you care to refer to this amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 152. Madam Chairman, this goes exactly to the point about the past delegations of areas as being rare and uncommon, and what this would do is to remove the authority of the EQC to go back and undo those areas. It's sort of a compromise put out to say that, okay, we're going to change the rules on a going forward basis, but what is done, and there's some justification there that stood the test of time. It hasn't had all the impacts that people have said. It has probably... You know, we can argue on both sides as to how well that served Wyoming, but I think it served Wyoming well. And so that's exactly what this amendment does, is it says those previous delegations will stand, and we move forward with in a new period, removing that ability for them to make future delegations. That's the amendment. Happy to answer any questions.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, I do have a question. And frankly, I think I've got one of these, so I suppose I'm affected. But my question is, what, if anything, is the practical effect of this delegation, particularly with regard to designation, particularly with regard to private land? As I say, I think we've got one, but I don't think it has ever impinged in our operation. So I want to know, as a legal matter, what's the practical effect of this?
Senator Schiffer.
Madam Chairman, and I'll try and answer. And I think we're on the amendment, and it does apply. The practical effect means you can't mine coal. That's it. Can't mine coal. That's really all the protection that's built in to rare and uncommon. In terms of gas, nope, doesn't have any effect. Oil, no effect. You designate it, you can't mine coal. And let me tell you one of the places where this thing came into play, and it happens to be where there is coal, the site of Fort Phil Kearny and the Fetterman Massacre. This is how we protected that till we could really get protection on it. And there is coal in that valley. You got to be careful when you start playing with these things. It took us a long while to really protect the site of Fort Phil Kearny and the site of the Fetterman Massacre. But it happened to be one of those places where there is a massive coal seam that goes underneath there. And as a matter of fact, it was owned by an energy company. Would they have mined it? I don't know. But it prevented them from mining their coal. That was it. Did not prevent them from going and exploring for gas or methane production or any of those. Nope, doesn't make any difference. but they did own it. They, again, they were a very responsible energy company. While they didn't give up the site of Fort Phil Kearny and the Fetterman Massacre willingly, they were happy to sell it to us. And that's how we got the ultimate protection. But in the interim, this kind of pays off for that. But that's the protection. They can't mine coal. That's it.
Are you ready for the question? Senator Bebout.
Hey, Madam Chairman, on and against the amendment, and the only exception I would take to my colleague's comments from Johnson County is he's right when he says you can't mine coal, but it says mineral interest, which would include gravel. And, in fact, one of the areas that was determined to be very rare or uncommon was a site called Bessemer Mountain in Natrona County, where there was a proposal for a small mining permit to be able to mine gravel there, and that went through the process. It was a complicated, messy deal all the way around. Ultimately, that was determined to be very rare and uncommon, and so it's a mineral interest that it refers to, which would include coal but other minerals like gravel. And the other thing about this, and my colleague from Fremont County makes some good points, and I certainly appreciate him bringing this amendment, but it's just things change. And if things change, this provides a tool. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. It doesn't mean overnight a lot of people are going to petition and go out there and try to do it. I would submit to you that it's going to be a heck of a lot more difficult to go back and change something that's already been done. And the only reason you would ever have a chance of doing that with the seven-member board is if there really was a need that really could be proven and shown for them to change that vote. That would be a very hard vote for them to make, but this gives them that opportunity. I would ask you to defeat the amendment.
Senator Driscoll?
I would raise an opposition as well. The board's there for a reason. It was written into statute, and I represent to you the legislature has a lot better things to do than to spend their time arguing whether something ought to be revoked or not. There's other methods and means to do that. And for us, we spend a lot of our time on what seems like pretty trivial matters, and this is something that is best left to a board that it was set up to do that. It was written in statute. I think we're best to leave it well enough alone.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Well, this amendment is sort of a sleeping dogs amendment, I think, you know, and it's kind of like we're going to make this change as we go forward. We're taking away this capability as we go forward. Fair enough. This legislature is making a policy change agreement about that. But there's been a lot of water under these bridges, and there's been turbulent deals, and we've arranged and came to a point in time where we have these designations, frankly, because they apply to coal and gravel. It's not the end of the world, but it is a point where we are saying, that's then, we have a new policy going forward, and I think that would satisfy a lot of folks. Continue, you know, the protections that were hard fought and applied to these past areas, and you know, give a good balanced policy moving forward. That's the purpose of the amendment. I ask for your support. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 152, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Division.
All those in favor, please rise.
Pretty loud.
Nine.
It's always good to breathe before you vote.
The motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 152 has failed. The reading clerk will read in the Second Amendment.
House Bill 152, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2, page 1, line 12.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 152. Members of the Senate, this is a technical correction. I tried to find statute 35.1.112 and couldn't do it.
Then I realized it was supposed to be 3511, so I would ask for your support.
All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 152, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 152 has passed. We're back on the bill.
Question.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a question for the sponsors or opponents or proponents. One thing I'd like to know is we've heard that ultimately that the only things you really can't do on this is probably mine something. But the other thing I'd like to know about this is what's the practical effect with respect to other types of permits? I mean, you may technically, and there may not be anything in statute that prohibits you from developing certain mineral interests, but ultimately is the practical effect that once this designation is in place, that it's out of play as far as permitting. You might be able to go into the Oil and Gas Commission or the Industrial Siting Council or anything else. And there's permits, and those things require input from other governmental agencies. And so what's the practical effect of this that we've seen in the past, if we know?
Senator Driscoll?
We do know, and we had an absolute example of it this year in Cook County when they filed. The designation overlapped existing mining claims. It was absolutely a taking. There was people at the hearing that were absolutely flabbergasted that their claims, some of them they went around, some of the ones that were unperfected went over the top of them. There was no concern or thought as to how it went, and that's exactly why this law needs repealed. Is there is, at the point in time that what the good senator referred to, at the point in time this was put in, those methods and those hearings were not in place, and this was set up to deal with that. Now we have a redundant system, and there's absolutely no reason for rare and uncommon. All it is a layer, and it does something else that's really interesting. Environmental groups have figured it out, and they've come in and they used it. This was our second pass in Cook County. They'd applied once, pulled it back, second time came back. If you get on one of their websites, you can find numerous instances they're looking at using it. You're going to see it as a tool to shut down all kinds of things across Wyoming, and it's not little areas. They started out with, as the good tall senator over there talked about, they started out with 500 acre pieces, and now we're into hundreds of thousands of acres. And it affects private property rights. It affects our income as far as the state goes. Once that designation's in place, the government agencies look at it, and it's about like a wilderness area. It's even though this, in truth, does not affect some of the things, I can guarantee you our local Forest Service did not show up at the meeting because they didn't even want to get up and talk about it. They knew it was going to affect what happened with grazing. They knew what was going to happen with other things. This bill revokes really a bad abuse by environmental groups of a piece of our law, and I encourage you to let's get it done and get it gone. We really don't want another hearing in Cook County.
All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 152, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 152 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration. Oh, excuse me. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again. And then by.
You have heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion has carried.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears the desk.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand in recess until 1:30.
Are there any announcements? Senator Bebout?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Committee Number 9, Minerals, will meet tomorrow, Thursday, February 24th, upon adjournment in room H-18 with the House Minerals Committee to discuss joint interim topics.
Other, Senator Burns?
Mr. President, your Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources will be meeting twice tomorrow
the first time at 8 a.m. In order to interview nominations of the governor. We will be interviewing live Millward Simpson for the position, for reappointment of the position of Parks and Cultural Resources Director, and Scott Talbert to the position of Game and Fish Director. We will then be interviewing by phone Mickey Aspel, Kerry Little, and Charles Price as commissioners to a commissioner, commissioner designates to the Game and Fish Commission. And then the committee will meet again at noon recess to discuss interim topics.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 7 will meet tomorrow at 8 a.m. We're going to take up two of the governor's appointments, Ken Bynes as the insurance one's at 8 and one's at 8:30. There's one more appointment that we're trying to schedule, and we won't be able to schedule tomorrow, so we're going to have a phone interview at some time on Friday, and I'll make that announcement. That's for Lanny Applegate, State Fire Marshal. It'll be sometime on Friday by phone.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, a couple of announcements. Mr. President, your Transportation Committee is going to meet 10 minutes after adjournment today to take up House Bill 194 engrossed, next of kin driver's license option, and House Bill 207 engrossed, protection of activities in private vehicles. Mr. President, it will be a learning experience for some of us, I'm sure. Mr. President, your Transportation Committee will also meet on Thursday House 17 with our counterparts from the House. We will be visiting with Director Cox from the Department of Transportation and also looking at interim subjects for your Transportation Committee.
Senator Cole.
Yeah, Mr. President, just a reminder for the Education Committee. The meeting we had scheduled for Thursday on adjournment has been canceled and changed to Friday upon noon recess in room H10, and we'll meet with the House Committee to discuss interim topics. That's Friday at noon, after we've had a chance to eat lunch, so we're real well refurbished and ready to argue with it.
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, and Mr. President, one other thing, and I don't have the names and times available, but we will be meeting tomorrow morning and also at noon in room 302 to conduct hearings, and we will have a complete list, and I'll present that to the body this afternoon.
Other announcements? Seeing none, you've heard the motion. Motion being that we be recessed until 1:30 p.m. this afternoon. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried. We'll be back at 1:30 p.m. this afternoon. We are now at recess.